Welcome to the Back 9 Report, presented by eDraft.com.
Hello and welcome to this week's edition of the Back 9 Report, presented by eDraft.com. We go live every Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time, checking on the world of golf to bring you the latest news, insights, analysis, interviews, recaps, previews. Hey, we cover anything and everything golf. My name is Carlos Torres. Every week, I'm alongside my co-host, Fred Alvader. Fred, hi, how are you today?
Carlos, I'm fantastic. I had a great day down at the Memorial in Columbus today. Can't wait to share some of the great interviews that we were able to get. Just give you a little tease, Carlos, and say that the number one player in the world will be on our show next week.
Don't give it away.
Today is the final day of May. You know what that means? The U.S. Open and summer golf season is upon us, and it's going to be packed.
Yes.
We have a ton of golf to talk about tonight. Jordan Spieth gets back to being Jordan Spieth at home in Texas. Aria Jutanagarn stakes a claim as someone to be reckoned with by winning her third LPGA Tour event in a row. And Rocco Mediate holds on to win a senior major in Michigan. Let's get to it. Let's go.
He made up for that PGA Championship so long ago. But, hey, let's go. Let's start right away. And like you said, Jordan Spieth, he's back home here in Texas, and he felt like it on the PGA Tour. So you have the first story here on the PGA Tour on the weekend backswing. So what happened with Jordan Spieth? How did he play?
Well, he proved he is back at Hogan's Alley in Fort Worth. Many have been bemoaning the fact that due to that ugly 7 on the 12th at Augusta in the last round of the Masters, Jordan Spieth was now damaged goods and his mind and his game were toast, if you can imagine that. Let me be the first to inform you that you were all wrong on all accounts. His game, mental attitude, and short game are just fine, thank you very much. Spieth had not performed up to his high expectations in his home events, and he felt he had something to prove this week at the Dean and DeLuca Invitational at Colonial. Spieth can now put his name on the trophy and the wall next to Ben Hogan, Sam Snead, Arnold Palmer, Ben Crenshaw, Lee Trevino, Jack Nicklaus, and Tom Watson as former winners of this event. He does need to win four more to get close to Hogan's 5 wins at Colonial, though. And I wouldn't put it past him, Carlos. He might just match or beat Hogan there at Colonial. Although he didn't have his best stuff on the front 9 holes, he managed 9 pars, but Ryan Palmer, Harris English, and Webb Simpson were all trying to make a run at him. Well, Jordan was just Jordan. He began the back 9 with 3 consecutive birdies and then finished out the backside by making a long putt at 16 for birdie, chipping in from behind the green at 17 for another birdie, and holding out another long putt on 18 for yet another birdie and the 3-shot win. He definitely has a flair for the dramatic and the big moments. When everything is on the line, that's when he seems to be at his very best. We saw Jason Day hold off every net at the Players. We saw Rory hit some amazing shots to win in Ireland 2 weeks ago, and now Jordan does it with a flat stick this week. With the 3 best players playing at such a high level of golf this summer, We just can't miss what's going to be happening here in the next few weeks. And they're in Columbus, as I mentioned, for the Memorial. I'm sorry. And we have the top 3 golfers in the world golf rankings in the field. And as I mentioned, Jason Day won his last outing at the Players. Jordan is coming off a win at home in the Texas at the Colonial, and Rory won at home in Ireland. Can Jason Day win this week at home in Columbus? Carlos, it's going to be fun.
Oh, the U.S. Open is shaping up to be a great one with all 3 of the top players coming off a win now this today. Oh, my God, this is going to be incredible. So a great week for the Memorial there. Can't wait to see who's going to come out on top and challenge the top 3 players in the world. Hey, but let me tell you one thing. Those 3 are superstars. The LPGA has many superstars. including the world number one, Lydia Ko. But hey, it has a new superstar, and her name is Arya Yutanagarn. Actually, she has been a superstar since the start of May, but she capped off what has been an incredible month this past Sunday at the inaugural LPGA Volvic Championship by winning her third consecutive event, this time by 5 shots over Christina Kim at 15 under at 273 shots. No player in the LPGA history, which dates back to 1950, has done what the 20-year-old Thai has accomplished in winning her first 3 titles in consecutive fashion, each of her first 2 wins coming at the Yokohama Tire LPGA Classic in Alabama and the Kings Mill Championship in Virginia were by one-stroke margins. Yutanagarn didn't have to sweat the final several holes this time around, making birdie on 4 of the last 5 holes to wrap up the win with a closing 67 at Travis Point Country Club in Ann Arbor, Michigan. Yutanagarn's streak began after letting the LPGA's first major of the year, the A&A's Inspiration, slip through her grasp in April. She had the tournament in hand with 3 holes to play, ultimately fading before Lydia Ko took her second consecutive major title. Yutanagarn finished inside the top 20 in the 3 starts immediately after that loss before her current run. Now she has an opportunity to avenge that major meltdown in her next start, which will be the KPMG Women's PGA Championship, starting in 10 days at Sahali Country Club in Washington. If Yutanagarn can win her first major, then she will have an opportunity to tie the LPGA record for most wins in a row. Both Nancy Lopez in 1978 and Annika Sorenstam in 2004 through 2005 have won 5 straight LPGA starts. I have to take a little bit more to talk about Arya because this is the foundations of what could be an incredible career. She was once the top amateur-ranked player in the world, but after what seemed to be nearing the launch to stardom, in a practice round of the 2013 Wegmans LPGA Championship, she injured her shoulder by tumbling down an incline while chasing her sister, Moria, with a water bottle. The injury required corrective surgery. She had to take some time off, and she returned to win her card for 2015, but she kind of lost her way on tour, missing the cut at 10 consecutive tournaments and got to the point where she said she was scared to hit the ball. But that win at the Yokohama Tire washed all that away, and we predicted it. We said, hey, this could be the top, taking all that confidence, those fears away, and she may be gaining that new confidence. And now she's really shaking up the LPGA with newfound confidence, becoming a rising star that brightens women's golf. Jessica Korda, who played with her on Sunday's final round, couldn't believe Yutanagarn's power off the tee. She was often driving 300 yards or farther with a 3-wood. And there's no discouragement on tour that Yutanagarn's obliteration of the competition is something bad. Instead, there's excitement at the birth of a potentially game-changing young star. And Fred, to wrap it up, I strongly believe she has all the tools to become number one and overtake Lydia Ko as the top player in the world and establish what could be an epic rivalry for at least the next decade that could propel women's golf to the stratosphere. Now it will be up to Lydia Ko to answer the call, hey, Arya is calling for it.
Yeah, you know, we had talked about Arya Yutanagarn way back before she hurt her shoulder. She was playing extremely well, and she petitioned the tour for early entry, and Michael Wan refused it because he didn't feel she was quite mature enough, and she kind of proved that by chasing her sister and falling and hurting herself. But she is a tremendous talent. And I'm going to tell you, I was up there at Traverse Point last week and watched her, looked at the course, a beautiful, beautiful golf course, by the way, Carlos, really, really nice place. And she just played so much better. The greens were so hard, it took really good shots. I don't know how many balls I saw hit the middle of the green and then go completely over. And that's unusual. I mean, you know, these girls hit the ball good enough that if you hit it in the middle of the green, it should stay at least on the green. But they were so hard. It was so firm, so fast. And she was just mashing the ball, left the driver in the locker room, didn't even put it in the bag, just played with the 3-wood, like you said. And she just dominated. She did a great job. Everybody's pretty happy she's taking the week off this week, so give somebody else a chance to win. But she should be a force in the you know, in the U.S. Women's or the KPMG coming up here real quick. Hey, on the Champions Tour, here's a blast from the past. Rocco Mediate held off Monty to win his first Champions Tour major. Rocco had his biggest moment in golf trying to beat Tiger Woods at Torrey Pines in the 2009 U.S. Open. Even took Tiger to an extra 18 holes and then a few more before Woods finally won his 14th and last major title thus far. That runner-up was Mediate's best finish ever in a major championship on the regular tour, and he only had three other top tens in 28 years of major competition. But he ended his major drought with a win at the Senior PGA Championship at difficult Harbor Shores in Benton Harbor, Michigan. He had two wins on the Champions Tour in his rookie season of 2013, but had not won on the Champions Tour since. It's a very big win. It somewhat validates a very good professional career that saw him win six times on the regular tour, although he fought back issues for over 25 years. Always known as a great ball striker and accurate off the tee, he had issues with putting, and he missed a few short ones this week. But his iron play was steady, and he continually found fairways and greens. He did manage 5 one-putt greens, coming home to secure his 500 par 66 and the win over two-time senior PGA champion Colin Montgomery and perpetual major championship leaderboard fixture Bernhard Langer. When is this guy ever going to quit playing? Langer, he's right there at the top every week. This win was his first top 10 on the Champions Tour this season. He moves to number 6 on the Charles Schwab Cup points race. And now that he has some competency, we may just see Rocco at the top of more leaderboards, Carlos.
Totally, totally agree. And good for him. I mean, it's good to see him now competing. And, of course, like you mentioned, have somebody else, however, Bernhard, at the top of the majors there. But, hey, good for Rocco finally getting his first major. Great win for him. Hey, let's talk a little bit now about the European Tour. You know, a challenging final day there at Wentworth. Chris Wood, he raced out of the blocks. The Englishman, he established a 4-shot lead halfway through the final round after an opening of 9 of 29. Sweden's Rickard Karlberg, he had set a clubhouse target of 8 under par after a fantastic final round of 65, but at that stage, it would look unlikely to be enough as Wood turned at 12 under. But everything fell apart for Wood in back nine, and he had to limp home. And despite a back nine of 40, he took the victory in the BMW PGA Championship there at Wentworth. The 28-year-old finished 1 shot clear of Sweden's Rickard Karlberg. Masters champion Danny Willett, he finished alone in third, with Frenchman Julien Quint and Romain Wattel tied for fourth with Thomas Aiken of South Africa. This was Chris Wood's third European Tour title and the most significant win of his professional career. He's the first English winner of the BMW PGA Championship since Luke Donald in 2012, but he's the 22nd different Englishman to win the tournament since 1955. In claiming his title, Wood moves comfortably now inside the top 20 on the official world golf rankings, all the way up to number 22. In addition, he has climbed to third place, Fred, on the European Ryder Cup points list.
Yeah, that's, you know, he's always been kind of a fringe player, so, you know, maybe he'll get going there. Hey, just a real quick summary. The NCAA team championship, the women's team, was last week. And the final match that was on Wednesday between Washington and Stanford was a classic. If you didn't catch any of that, you ought to try and find some video on or something, because it was really an amazing match. Stanford was heavily favored, but Washington refused to give up and nipped the Huskies in the end. It came down to the very last match, the last hole. It was quite something. The NCAA men's championships are going on right now. Aaron Wise, a sophomore from Oregon, won the individual title earlier this week. Illinois versus Oregon is one semifinal that's going on right now, and Texas is playing USC in the other semifinal. That match is all tied 2-2, with the deciding match still on the course. And then the winners will meet for the team championship tomorrow. LSU, Vanderbilt, South Carolina, Oklahoma, were eliminated in the quarterfinals. So I tell you, Carlos, the next 3 months, it's just going to be unbelievable. You got 10 major championships between the LPGA, PGA, and Champions Tour. You got the WGC Bridgestone. You got the UL International Crown. And, oh, yeah, that little thing called the 2016 Rio Olympics will yield a new golf medal to someone in August. So, you know, don't forget, there's also going to be a Ryder Cup after all this stuff. You know, I'm going to have to take a nap. I'm tired already just thinking about it, of course.
There's going to be a lot of action in a short period of time, so don't get to be napping because you might miss it, friends. You might miss
it. And we're going to be talking about it.
Oh, yes, definitely. Well, that wrap up our weekend backswing. We're going to take a short break. When we come back, we have the Par 5 News presented by United Golf Networks. So nobody go anywhere. Stay here with us.
Thank you for listening. We'll be right back. In the meantime, don't forget to visit www.edraft.com for analysis, breaking news, and more. Also, remember to follow us on Twitter at edraftsports and on Facebook at facebook.com/edraftsports. Now, back to the show.
And we're back, and now it's time for the Par 5 News presented by United Golf Network. And we're going to start talking, Fred, you're going to have the tee shot, and you're going to talk about the PGA Tour. Apparently, they're going to stay with the Trump courses.
Yeah, absolutely. And before I start on it, Carlos, I got to apologize. I got a scratchy throat here, and every time I go to talk, I want to start coughing. So I apologize in advance for that. But, yes, Fox News reported last week that the USGA announced that the 2017 U.S. Women's Open would still be held at Trump National in New Jersey. Trump's daughter and the USGA met with media to promote the event last Monday. The PGA of America has also announced it will continue with plans to hold the 2017 Senior PGA at Trump National near Washington, D.C. next year, and that the 2022 PGA Championship is still scheduled for Trump's course in Bedminster, New Jersey, just outside of New York. This is a big win for Trump, as the governing bodies have backed away from Trump due to his inflammatory immigrant comments early in his presidential campaign last fall. And last summer, the country's leading golf organization issued a joint statement to distance themselves from Trump, while the LPGA, PGA of America, and PGA Tour and USGA do not usually comment on presidential politics. Mr. Trump's comments are inconsistent with our strong commitment to an inclusive and welcoming environment in the game of golf, they all said. The PGA of America had even canceled the Grand Slam of Golf last October that was scheduled to be held at Trump's course near Los Angeles. They were concerned about negative publicity that could come from staging one of its prominent events at a Trump course. USGA Executive Director Mike Davis said last summer that his organization would be evaluating things. Well, evidently they've evaluated and they think Trump's money is okay. So a spokesman for the USGA confirmed that the event remains on the calendar for mid-July of 2017. Instead of going to a different venue, neither the USGA nor the PGA of America put out statements in recent months explaining why they've decided to keep their future events at Trump courses. In March, Trump briefly left the campaign trail to go to Doral when the tournament was down there. He wasn't there long and didn't make quite as big a splash as he normally does, but he was there. The only event that still remains up in the air is the WGC that's held at Doral every March as part of the Florida Swing. The current sponsor, Cadillac, has their contract expired and they have not renewed, so they're still looking for somebody. Ty Votel says that no decision had been made on whether to keep the event at Trump National Doral or permanently sever the relationship, which means they haven't found a sponsor to pick up the tab just yet. But I got a feeling. I just have a feeling. Donald will find a sponsor for that tour event, and so they can keep their marquee event on the Florida Swing in Miami on Doral where they've played a PGA Tour event since Billy Casper won there in 1962, Carlos.
Oh, he will, for sure. Mark it down. And if he becomes president, worst. You know, sponsors will be flying there. But, hey, let me talk about this. I know last week you got served with the Olympics.
We slammed you pretty good last week.
I know it's two against one, like you said. I'm used to that. It's okay. You know, the Olympics are just getting used to the golf thing and all that, and it'll grow. It'll grow whether you like it or not, Kieran likes it or not. This is going to be a big thing in golf, okay? It's going to be bigger than anything else because the Olympics are the best thing in sport. And this is becoming
Craig Kahn's on your side, and he's going to talk about it in just a little bit here. So you got somebody on your side.
All right, two against two. All right, we got it. Hey, but this is kind of a weekly topic for us, and as usual, I'm on top of it, and I'm talking, like I said, about the Olympic Games and, of course, golf in it. Let's start by world number three, Rory McIlroy, who has been enthusiastic about representing Ireland there at Rio de Janeiro, acknowledged there is a chance he might not go, as has Masters champion Danny Willett, who also had said the same thing, but who is in line to represent England. He has been, as many people wrongly do, let me tell you, reading things that things are worse than they is, that they are. And he was speaking on last Tuesday, ahead of the European Tourist BMW PGA Championship at Wentworth. And Willett said that if the mosquito-borne virus were to be a massive threat to himself, his wife, or their infant son, then I probably wouldn't go. But as it stands at this minute, I think everything should be okay. As you all know, Australian Sam Scott and Mark Leishman, along with South Africans Louis Tyson, Charles Schwartzel, and Fiji's Vijay Singh, they have already said they'll decline to participate in the Olympics. And Leishman, Scott, and Singh, they acknowledge publicly that the Zika virus threat played into their thinking. And to add fuel to the fire, more than 100 prominent physicians, 150 to be exact, physicians, bioethicists, and scientists from around the world posted a letter Friday urging the World Health Organization Director General Margaret Chan to exert pressure on Olympic authorities to move the Olympics, the whole Olympics, not golf, the whole Olympics from Rio de Janeiro, or delay the games because of public health concerns over the Zika virus. Let me just tell you, it's not going to happen. But anyway, Brazil, which is hosting the Olympics and the Paralympics, is at the epicenter of the rapidly evolving mosquito-borne epidemic. The letter is signed by 150 individuals from more than a dozen countries, including Brazil, Japan, Israel, Russia, Sweden, South Africa, and the United States. It calls on the World Health Organization to convene an independent group to advise it and the International Olympic Committee and for authorities to reconsider the decision to hold the Games in Rio. Yeah, right. The group of scientists is not seeking general assurance from the WHO. Instead, what they want is a frank discussion among independent experts. Each author has published articles in recent weeks and months of calling for the Games to be postponed of Zika. In the open letter posted that Friday on Twitter and Facebook, the authors said that evidence shows that Brazil's Zika strain has more serious medical consequences than researchers previously knew, that Rio de Janeiro is one of the hardest hit areas of the epidemic, and that Rio's mosquito killing efforts are not meeting expectations. As you all know, Zika infections during pregnancy, okay, can cause serious fatal brain abnormalities, including microcephaly, which is characterized by abnormally small heads and severe developmental problems. This virus has also been linked to neurological disorders in adults. Zika is primarily transmitted through mosquitoes, but it has been found that it can be spread through sexual contact, and even though there has been a very low amount of that. But let me tell you this. I don't need to be a scientist, a bioethicist, a physician, to tell you, because I come from an island where we deal with this kind of mosquitoes and things, and that was last week there, okay? It's not Resident Evil back down there. It's not, you know, it's not the Walking Dead thing. The Zika virus is not the dengue fever, okay? If you want to be afraid of something, be afraid of the dengue. That can kill you, Okay, and there's something, I don't know, a lot of people, you know, there's in Hawaii, there's an emergency. It was declared in February because of the high incidence of dengue fever and Zika, okay? And nobody complained back then to go to the Champions Tour or the tour or the other event that was there from the PGA Tour. You know, you spray some mosquito repellent, and that's it. That's what you do when you're doing, when you go on a cruise and you go to Mexico, you go to Belize, you go to Guatemala, Honduras, all those places. They tell you the first thing when you go down from the cruise, hey, take this mosquito repellent because you might be bitten by mosquitoes. You know, it's just ridiculous thing. It's going overboard, this thing about the Zika virus. I just think it's bad publicity for a country that's really dealing with it. And if you really want to know, Rory or Danny, just talk to the people in Brazil. I know people in Brazil. I know people in Rio de Janeiro. And the thing is not as bad as they're saying. They're making it out to be, like I say, like Resident Evil or The Walking Dead out there. It's not that way. Business is as usual. And the thing is being controlled. And when you're going to be on the Olympic Village, everything will be okay. If you're going to go and get the mosquito bite, then go to the Amazon or something like that. But, hey, you'll be fine. All those other athletes are going there. So, people, first, get the facts, okay? I know those are scientists and all that, but, hey, just go there and find out about things, how they are going there. And before starting spreading things like this is the end of the world, this is the Zika. The dengue is far worse. The chikungunya is far worse. They're out there, and nobody's talking about them. I really don't get it about this Zika thing. Really, I have been twice to Puerto Rico where they say it's so much bad. Hey, nothing's happened to me. Just put the mosquito repellent, and it's over, Fred. I'm going to stop.
Well, David Lingmerth is from Sweden, and he's the defending champion at Memorial. And so he talked today, and he's excited. He's number two on the Swedish team along with Henrik Stenson. And if he can hold on and stay on the team, he's excited to go. He's not concerned about anything. He hasn't seen anything to stop him. He's ready to go tomorrow. Hey, Carlos, we got some Tiger news to talk about tonight. Even though he's not played a competitive round of golf for quite a while, and he's also losing sponsors. It was announced he just lost the Muscle Farm endorsement deal just after 2 years. It was reported that the sports nutrition and supplement maker paid Woods $2.5 million just to get out of the deal, despite almost 3.5 years left on their 5-year, $7 million contract. Woods was to receive $5 million in company stock and royalties related to sales of Woods-specific products. Well, when the deal was announced a couple years ago, the stock went to nearly $12 a share, sending it up 10%. It peaked at 14, but now it's currently trading at $2.70. So Tiger stock wouldn't be worth anything if he got it anyhow. So on the other side of it, Muscle Farm is facing a number of lawsuits, including a $65 million lawsuit filed by a supplier, Capstone Nutrition, for a breach of contract. So they got some problems, and they couldn't afford to pay him anyhow, and their stock's in a tank. So I don't think Tiger did much to help him out, doesn't look like. In more Tiger news, David Faraday was interviewed in Ireland last week, and he said 14-time major winner Tiger Woods' career could be over, but he's too stubborn to admit it. He said, "I'm not sure that Tiger will come back because it is a nerve in his back. It's not muscular or skeletal. It's not something you can deal with in a physical way. He's in phenomenal shape, just ripped as usual, but he's not able to make a full pass at it. I saw him a few weeks ago in Houston. He hadn't played in 5 months. He had some good shots and some awful shanky-looking things. I think he has a feeling that if he doesn't make it back this time, he might be done from a physical standpoint. But he's too stubborn and too good and too physically gifted to be able to just give it up. He loves it too much. There must be something about the game that has a hook because he could buy one of the Bahamas and declare himself a republic. I don't think he needs to try and come back. I don't think he wants to do it. He really does, but I'm not sure that he can. I'm not sure he is any way clear on whether he can or not. You know, this is the first time, Carlos, I've heard that Tiger's back is nerve-related rather than physical. That does make a problem. It is a little different situation there. Those things, that's a whole different ball game than just trying to fix some muscles or move some vertebrae around or fix some things up like that. So, you know, maybe this thing is way more serious than what we think it is, Carlos.
That's really getting bad with Tiger, and not knowing anything. All that we see was that last time that he put three balls in the water, and I don't know what to think. I really hope for his sake that he gets back, he somehow gets to play, but everything is indicating totally the contrary, and that's not good for him. Hopefully we can see him back and challenging the top players in the world. Hey, talking about the European Tour, there's some sweeping change coming to it over the next couple of years, because CEO Keith Pelley said Thursday during Golf Channel's coverage of the BMW PGA Championship, he said there at Wentworth Club, and I quote, "We are in the midst of transforming this tour. It will be completely different in 2017 and a complete overhaul by 2018, and really doing it by listening to the players." Golf Channel commentator Rich Lerner, he pressed Pelley for details, but while the CEO didn't offer specifics, he did cite some areas which would see significant improvements. A player's first philosophy was about the best that he and Frank Novella could get out of that cryptic Pelley, who said, and I quote, "The schedule will be different. It will be more friendly from a travel perspective for the players. There will be a number of events where the prize funds will be significantly increased, and there will be more playing opportunities for all of our members. A different schedule for sure, and a different players first philosophy," end of quote. Pelley, who was also asked by Novella about the tour's slow play crackdown and regarding Wentworth, the desire of players to play on proper courses, but he's pinning his hopes on BMW resurgence after Ernie Els restores the HSL course design. But one of his key comments, more playing opportunities, to me seems unimaginable considering that the tour plays nearly every week already. But hey, he's been doing some major overhauling, and I can't wait to see what it's going to be looking like, at least now in 2017, like he's saying. So touching there, more European golf news. Darren Clark, he announced his first wave of Ryder Cup vice captains on Friday there at the BMW PGA Championship. He pegged Thomas Bjorn, Patty Harrington, and Paul Laurie as three of his assistants for this year's match at Hasseltine National Golf Club. He said that, I'm sorry, he sought the advice of former winning Ryder Cup captains Paul McKinley and Sam Torrance and would be speaking to some more. He also said that he wanted to pick the brains of those captains that have been on the losing end. He wants to cover all the bases. Harrington, as you might remember, he's a three-time major champion. He was an assistant for the European team on their victory in 2014. Bjorn, he played in the Ryder Cup in 2014. Yet, he has also been a vice captain three times. Laurie, who won the 1999 Open, will be an assistant for the first time. The trio has 10 collective Ryder Cup appearances as players with a 14-18-6 record. Fred Clark has the ability to name five total assistants, so he may not be done. U.S. Captain Davis Love III has already announced four of his assistants in Tiger Woods, Tom Lehman, Steve Stricker, and Jim Furyk.
Yeah, I'm sure they're going to have probably some more. You know, they got to have a lot of assistants. It makes a bigger party. Hey, did you happen to see the wayward shot that Tony Finau hit at Colonial last week? It plunked a young girl in the head, requiring stitches. Taking a page from Phil Mickelson's playbook, he even did Phil one better when he showed up at the girl's home with gifts. If you saw the pictures, the girl got hit really not very, it drew a lot of blood. She had blood streaming down her face, and it was just not a pretty picture. When one of Phil's wayward shots happened to hit a fan, he gives him a signed glove with a crisp $100 bill attached. Well, Finau unexpectedly showed up at the girls' home, and he did Phil's signed glove and Cino a little bit better. He had chocolates, he had flowers, and he even had a card, and went right to her house. So taking to Twitter and Instagram as, you know, the modern custom, the young woman wrote, "Luckily, I am okay, and all I needed was a few stitches." In a very stand-up gesture, he, Finau, showed up at my door with flowers, chocolates, a get-well card. He stayed and talked with us for a bit. "I wish you all the best of luck on the tour going forward." Signed, your new favorite fan. Carlos, you know, this has a really good ending, but it could have been much worse. Luckily for the young lady and Finau, all was forgiven, and it turned into pretty good publicity for Finau and the PGA Tour. Word to the wise, though, folks, if you go to a golf tournament, pay attention to what's going on. Watch where you're standing. I mean, these guys are good, but some of them hit it way off course sometimes, and that little white ball will hurt if you get hit by it. And, Carlos, that wraps up the Par 5 News presented by United Golf Network, who wants every golfer to enjoy the game more and have the opportunity to earn money while doing it. They offer a top line of golf products, everything a golfer needs. Clubs, balls, bags, shoes, apparel, and accessories are available at discount pricing. United Golf Network not only has an excellent product line, they also offer every golf nut the chance to earn. They have the Director's Program, where you can earn up to 18% on every sale, so you can get up-to-the-date equipment. You don't have to pay top price. You can have your own pro shop, earn a little bit of money, play a little golf. That's what it's all about. Visit UnitedGolfNetwork.com today. Check out the products, discounts, and their opportunity costs.
And that will wrap up our Par 5 News presented by United Golf Network. We're going to take our second short break. When we come back, we have not one, we have two VIGs, very important guests of the week. They're Craig Cannon and Elise Galdead, so don't go away.
Thank you for listening to the Back Nine Report presented by eDraft.com. We'll be right back. Don't forget to check out our co-hosts on Twitter by clicking their names in the episode description. Now, back to the show.
And we're back, and now it's time for our VIG, Very Important Guest of the Week segment. And we have two VIGs, Very Important Guests of the Week. First up is a good friend of the show, is Craig Cannon. He's the LPGA Shift Communications Officer. We'll talk to Fred about the LPGA at the Volvic LPGA Championship. So, Fred, if you can give us some details about what we're going to listen.
Yeah, I saw Craig up at Ann Arbor. He came in for the Pro-Am party on Tuesday night, stuck around for a couple days up there, and I saw him up there, and he agreed to sit down and talk with us for a couple minutes and gave us some great information on several topics confronting the LPGA Tour right now. They're playing a bunch of tournaments in a row. The Olympics is really squeezed the schedule for the whole summer. We talked about the youth and talent on tour, and then we talked about the Olympics. And so, as I mentioned, he's kind of on your side. He's all for the Olympics. He's going to be down there. He's on the communications committee for the Olympics. So, it was very interesting. We had a great chat.
So let's play it.
We're happy to be talking once again to Craig Cannon. We are here at the Volvic Championship in Ann Arbor, Michigan. And, Craig, I know you came in Tuesday evening for the Pro-Am party, and looked to me like University of Michigan and Ann Arbor kind of rolled out the red carpet for you guys.
To go to Chrysler Center for a draw party is a real good thing. To go to the big house for anything is a real good thing. And to combine the two was a special night. I mean, we talk a lot, you know, when we're setting up events or when we're trying to engage media in having that wow factor right out of the gate. We're trying to make an impression with your sponsors, your partners. And I think we did that. The only thing we needed a basketball hoop in there because we got some players that are not only about 6 feet tall, but they can shoot. That would have been fun for some of the folks in there, so maybe next year. But it was a great time, and just being back in Michigan is great for the LPGA. We've had such a warm welcome each and every time we've ever come here. I used to live in this state early in my career, and the people are fantastic, and they always embrace not only sports but the athletes, and they make them feel like their very own. So it's a community effort here.
And then you had Pro-Am yesterday, and it looked like it was a pretty big field. You had a lot of participation for the Pro-Am.
Always get participation. And the thing we talk about a lot is the customer experience in our Pro-Ams. We try to make them special. It's not, and I repeat, not a practice round for our players. They know what the purpose is. It's to take care of the check writers. It's to take care of the people that bring the LPGA here. It's not a mandate for us. It's just a practice. It's what our players have come to know and learn and understand, and it's part of our professional development. They know that they need to shake hands and they need to sign autographs, but they do it willingly. I mean, we've talked about this before, you and I. Our players not only say, "Hey, Craig," or "Hey, Mike Wan, how can I take part?" They say, "I want to take part." And there's a big difference. They are really all in. It's cool.
The LPGA Tour is by far the most engaging, and we talked about that before for sure. And especially when they see young girls in the crowd or young boys, they always make sure that they make eye contact and make them feel good for being here to watch them. Pretty good long run right now for the LPGA Tour. You got 11, 12 weeks in a row. You're wanting these girls to come out here and play.
Delta Airlines is really happy. American Airlines is really happy. Pretty soon Air Canada is going to be happy. You know, we've got a lot going on right now. We're going coast to coast with some events. We've got 11 tournaments in a row. We've got three major championships. We've got the UL International Crown, and then we've got the Olympics in Rio, and I'll be down there for that. It is a busy, busy time, and our players are having to make some tough choices about events that they might play or a year that they might have to take an event off that they've played for a number of years because you just can't play them all. But it's a good problem to have. You know, I always said we're going to be in a real good spot when media says the parking is overflowing or there's not enough food in the player dining or media dining area. All those things are good problems to have. We're excited about the schedule this year. We love the fact that we've got 11 events in a row. I think our players are appreciative of the fact that they've got opportunities to make a living, you know, and that's all good. But star power is huge right now. We've got some up-and-comers. We haven't had a winner over the age of 23 this year. I mean, that's crazy, crazy stuff. So when Minji Lee is out there winning and Arya Jitendugarn's won back-to-back events and Brooke Henderson's coming up and Lydia Ko saying, "Wait, where did all these kids come from?" And she's saying, "Kids, you know, I mean, what are we coming to on the LPGA?" But there's a lot of talent, a lot of reason for fans to come out, and I think we're going to have a great time over the next 11 weeks.
And you got Madeline Sagstrom sitting on the Sumatra Tour just one more win away from being up here full-time.
And everybody knows about her. Everybody knows about her. We do this thing, or at least I do. I send a congratulatory note every Sunday night to the Sumatra Tour winner and say, "Hope to see you soon." The fact of the matter is, I'm probably really going to see her soon out here on the LPGA. You know, been super dominant, right? Maybe the best golfer on her respective tour in all of golf right now. She's doing a phenomenal job.
And just qualified for the U.S. Open?
She did. She did qualify for the U.S. Open. And, you know, the thing is, and I caution everybody for all this, it's great to have the hype. It's great to have the players come out here and have these expectations on them, but you got to slow the train down. You got to let them kind of go at their own pace. You got to let them come out here and evolve. But when you don't have a winner over the age of 23, people are seeing a lot of star power at a very early age, and so expectations go up. As far as I'm concerned, that's fine. If the media exposure goes up along with it and we get bigger notoriety and a better platform for our players, then it's all good.
You mentioned the Olympics a little bit ago coming up here at the end of the summer. I got to commend you for as the director of communications for the LPGA Tour. We are seeing some of the other tours, the PGA Tour, the guys are dropping out. They're already saying they're not going to go. But when I chat with any LPGA player, they all say, excited about the opportunity to go to Rio for the 2016 Olympics. They're staying right on target.
Well, look, I can't speak for the guys. The guys have a schedule that's all year round, and you know we're excited about 34 events on our schedule. They've got 47 events or whatever the number is in a wraparound schedule, and they got decisions to make. And this is just an interesting year in golf. First and foremost, you got major championships on both tours being moved around to accommodate golf's return to the Olympic Games. The fact that golf's in Rio is a spectacular opportunity. Opportunity being a real key word for everybody. I'm on the communications committee for the Rio Olympics in golf, and I've sat in on those meetings. I know the importance of it. I know what it's going to take for us to be able to continue playing golf beyond Japan. I mean, this is the year. And so it's really critical that that athletes from various countries represent those countries and make the trip to Rio. So I can't speak specifically to the PGA Tour guys, but I can tell you that the LPGA Tour players are excited. The fact is, you know, we've got more than 30 countries represented each week on our tour with our membership. We play in 15 countries around the world within our schedule. We're shown in more than 170 countries worldwide each week on television around the globe. So we are the Olympics each and every week. You know, the only difference is I don't see a podium out there for a gold medal, a silver, and a bronze at our various events. But, yes, our players are excited. They're super excited to go down there and compete because it might be the only chance you ever get to do that in your lifetime. So why would you not go?
Let me ask you one question. What is the stance, what is the tour doing to make sure the health issues and the things are addressed before the women get there?
Well, I mean, everybody would take the same precautions, right? I mean, I'm getting my vaccinations, and I'm sure everybody else is. Look, every time there's an Olympic Games, anytime there's a huge global anything, people take precautions. That's what you do. And there's always negative publicity that comes out. And I've been around that for the last year and a half about the Rio Olympics. I think everybody's going to go down there prepared. We have kept our players in the loop with every bit of information that we've gotten. Nobody's hiding anything. There's nothing to hide. It's been out there in the media. I mean, if anybody doesn't know what Zeke is, they might be able to spell it by now. I mean, for gosh sakes, it's been talked about forever. So I think you just prepare yourselves. You go down there and you're ready to go. But our players are going to be in the know from they have been for a year, and they will be all the way up until the games begin. And we're going to do everything we can to keep information in front of them. That's what everybody should do. Hiding it's just it's not smart business.
The LPGA Tour has been on kind of the cutting edge of developing partnerships outside of just the LPGA Tour itself. The KPMG has joined with the PGA to develop the PGA Women's Championship. Michael announced the partnership with the PGA Tour, the strategic partnership, and now Top Golf has been added to another partnership. Tell me a little bit about those. What are you seeing from those? What do you expect to see more of going down the road?
Well, it's funny. I didn't know if you were going to lead me into the alliance with the PGA Tour by throwing me to Top Golf or lead me into the Top Golf with the PGA Tour alliance. Bottom line is our growth over the last 5 years or so on the LPGA has been because we've strategically partnered with the right folks. You can't do it on your own. We're all trying to make an impact. We're all trying to get notice. I've said this many times. If you are waiting for people to take notice of you, you better have a real good degree of patience because people just don't come chasing you. You got to go make it happen. You've got to make people take notice. And so we partnered with some folks that have been there before in some areas that we might not be as good at. The PGA Tour, maybe they want a bigger global following. Well, we're pretty global on the LPGA Tour. Maybe we like some of their digital assets and the way they do content. Maybe we like the way they run some of their TV, network deals. All those things are things to be talked about. We've sat down with the PGA Tour. We've had some meetings. Nothing's really truly been put into progress yet. You know, just a lot of talks right now. I hope some great things will come from it. I hope we'll have that PGA Tour, LPGA Tour merged event. That would be a great thing and really good for the game of golf to pair all the stars together. So I think that's a potential possibility and some things we're talking about. When it comes to the Top Golf Alliance, that's a smart one too. I mean, we've talked about this for years. Golf's demographic is tried and trusted, and we all know that 35 to 60-year-old folks love the game of golf, but we got to try to find a new crop of 15 to 20-year-olds that want to get into the game, or those who are casual observers of golf to become hooked and take up the game and play as much as you or I might. That's the goal. Topgolf brings that. It's entertainment. It's fun. It's a different way to be introduced to the game, perhaps, and maybe get hooked and then want to go play 18 holes or 9 or whatever that number is. So I think Topgolf's going to give us some opportunities to put our product there on TV monitors and potentially take some media days there in strategic places and do a lot of things we weren't able to do before. But to get to the crux of your comment at the very beginning, partnerships are the way we've gone. KPMG and the PGA of America, great with the LPGA. A&A, huge sponsor overseas in Asia, partners and maintains a major championship on the West Coast. The USGA and the LPGA partnering with USGA, LPGA Girls Golf Program, it's been a huge success for us. The Alliance is another one. Topgolf's another one. We're going to keep on going down that road, and I'm going to align with you, all right? And we're going to continue to come up with great ideas, all right? And they're probably all going to be yours, and even if they're mine, I'm going to give you credit for it because that's what we do.
Craig, thanks so much for sitting down and talking to us for a minute here in Ann Arbor. And the LPGA Tour, we know, is a great product. Anybody that's not out there watching these young ladies play and ply their trade are really missing the boat. And just good luck to you guys going forward.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it. Always good to be out here. And I know I'm going to see you at a couple of events coming up as well.
There you have it. That was an interview with Craig Kahn, the LPGA's Chief Communications Officer. And he's a smart man about the Olympics. There's finally something that's getting sometimes there. You know, that's the way he's thinking about it. But truth be told, I mean, he always talks great about everything the way that he explains it. And the LPGA is such a great show, such a great league because of that. It's such a great tour. They have it very, very well organized. The players are very welcoming. Like he said, each of them wants to be part of the success of it. It's an international tour. I mean, they have everything going. They should just get a little bit more publicity. And I think that now with that alliance with the PGA Tour and Topgolf, it's just going to go there. And like I said before in the Weekend Backswing, now that Adia Yatanagarn is really coming through and Lydia Ko is already established, that could be something big for that tour.
Well, and he mentioned, one of the things he mentioned is they share everything with the players. You know, they're in a position as a league, you know, they don't want their young women to be put in a position where it would be unhealthy for them or future unborn children. So they're going to take every precaution. They're going to know what's going on, and they're not going to put those young ladies in a position where they could do harm to themselves. So it's just not good business for them. So if they're comfortable with it, I feel pretty good that everything should be good, Carlos. So that's probably a non-factor. On the other interview, we talked with Elisa Gaudet, and she has been a model, an actress, a world traveler, and an author. She's taken up the cause for the Women's Golf Day, which is coming up 1 week from today, June 7th, and she tells us what Women's Golf Day is all about and what they're trying to accomplish with this worldwide event, Carlos.
Yeah, so just for you who don't know out there, Elisa Gaudet, she's the president of Executive Golf International, specializing in golf industry marketing, strategic partnerships, and promotions. She has an ongoing blog and industry column called On the Lip and is the author of the Two Good Rounds book series. Like you mentioned, she's also the founder of the International Women's Golf Day, of which, like you said, she talked about it with you. So let's play now the interview with Elisa Gaudet.
We're happy to welcome Elisa Gaudet to the Backline Report. She's a former model, actress, world traveler, and author. Her award-winning book with a golf theme, Two Good Rounds, was very well received. And lately, she's been involved with starting Women's Golf Day, which is set for Tuesday, June 7th, just a week from today. Elisa, you have had some very interesting careers. You've been a model,
yes,
appeared on television series, traveled extensively around the world, and have written this great book. How did you get started playing in golf to begin with?
Thank you, Fred. I had started, you know, my parents had put my sister and I in golf lessons when we were younger, and I think it was more jack of all trades, master of none, but enjoyed golf. Actually took it back up after I got out of college. Was working for MGM Latin America,
started playing again, and then I got a job with Latin Golf Tour. So, you know, just obviously when you're in the industry, you end up playing a little bit more, a little bit less, depends. But definitely surrounded by it ever since 2000.
So golf has kind of played an important role in your life and your career as you've gone forward.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I have 16 years in the golf industry now. So it's been my predominant career. As you mentioned, I dabbled in the entertainment industry right out of, you know, before college and in college. So, you know, and I think, you know, what happens is as we get older, the beauty of it is as you delve into different projects, you get to bring the experience that you have, and whether it's from traveling or what have you, and the people you meet, and that's kind of what's happened here with this Women's Golf Day. It's a collaboration of a lot of things, and you can see that it just really worked well to help unite people.
We here at the Backline Report are always about encouraging more women to embrace the fitness and the family benefits of golf. Your latest effort is the International Women's Golf Day. Can you tell us a little bit exactly what that is, and how did you come up with this idea?
Yep, so, you know, what happened was I go to a lot of sports business conferences that talk about all sports. I saw what the NFL and the NBA, a lot of other leagues were doing, and they were engaging women and really saw them as economic influencers. And that's when I thought, you know, we've all been trying in the golf industry to solve this puzzle of women, because there's, you know, 50% of our population is pretty much women around the world, almost. Millennials coming into the workforce next year, 80% of new hires will be millennials. 50% of those will be women. I mean, it's just, you know, how do we engage? And I really think that no one is going to buy a house on a golf course or join a country club or have their children participate in a sport without their spouse's approval. And I think that we had missed the boat. We have a golf widow, which is unfortunate, you know. And I think that's what we wanted to eliminate. And what really we saw was, let's let women have a positive experience. We don't have to convert everybody into an avid 18-hole player. That would be ideal and be wonderful, but let's just let people take it as they will. So it was a 4-hour experience, 2 hours of golf. So a woman who goes to any one of these events, and they're at retail locations, in golf courses in over 400 locations in 21 countries, has the option to either take lessons for about 2 hours, you know, probably 45 minutes on the driving range, then 45 minutes chipping and putting, or play 9 holes. And then there's 2 hours of socializing in which they'll learn about league play or, you know, if they great places to go around the world, talk to friends, meet new people. And the difference is, if you and I went and took tennis lessons tomorrow, we would both be with all new people that have never played before. So what we noticed was having the people that are new to the game with people that play, when they mix, it helps bring people into the fold. It's a lot more comfortable. There's a lot more conversion. And people just have a good time. People like sharing their stories that are already playing and bringing new people in. And new people like the comfort of knowing, here's your options.
Yeah, you mentioned this is an experience to get more women to the golf course. It's a 4-hour experience. There are over 400 golf facilities in more than 20 countries around the world participating in this. That had to be a huge effort to get all these people involved. And for any listener out there that's interested in coming to the Women's Golf Day next Tuesday, June 7th, you can visit womensgolfday.com/locations and find a location in your area. You were telling me that there's a large turnout, especially here in the United States, that you've partnered with some of the larger golf management companies to put the Women's Golf Day in their facilities.
Yes, I have to be extremely grateful. I mean, our whole team is to the people at Club Corp and Arcus Golf who came on, the management companies that came on based in Texas, but came on with courses all across the United States, PGA Tour Superstore that came on with all their stores across the U.S., and as well as Golfsmith, too, who has a considerable number of stores throughout the U.S. that are all on board. All of the golf store locations are free. There's no charge for anybody to go participate at a Golfsmith or PGA Tour Superstore. A lot of the locations are either free to nominal cost, and everybody's offering a little something different. You know, you could have champagne at the end of your, you know, at the end of your day. We empowered them and let them do what they want. So it could either be a private or a public event. They could charge or not charge. It's entirely up to each facility. they decided. So it really allowed. We have Valderrama in Spain and Mission Hills in China and Liberty National. And so all over the boards, there's public to private to Top Golf in Texas.
Well, Women Golf Day objective or mission is to engage, empower, and support women, and so they can experience this firsthand on June the 7th. What do you really expect? What do you really hope to see out of this event, Alisa?
Yeah, we are all surprised. We started a little over 8 months ago. We thought, we'd get U.S. and Canada the first year and see where it went. But, you know, the power of the Internet and, I guess connections. Like you said, I travel a lot. And thankfully, a lot of people that I've met over the years jumped on board. I think it really is, we are already seeing the benefits of, you know, really taking to heart this engage, empower, and support. We have letters. There's 50 women in India that are doing it in New Delhi, Australia. You know, it's going to go for 24 hours straight, starting in Australia, and it ends in Hawaii. Anybody who wants to even watch it, you can go to our social media tab, and the media will be coming in streaming. So right there, we're engaging and empowering women, giving them a platform. Women in Slovenia, places that some of us have never even heard of or what have you, and American women, Canadian women, Mexican women, you know, they all have a voice, and I think the unity speaks volumes that there is a market out there, and they are, there is, you know, whether it's economic power or social power or an influence, they are an influence in the world.
Well, women have been the fastest growing segment in the golf industry for the past few years, and they now make up about 23% of all the casual golfers that visit the golf courses. So what do you feel are maybe a couple of the key reasons that you think women should become more involved in golf?
Yeah, I think that, you know, people that have been in it, you know, I think this whole, what you see when you open up that map and you see it is a testament to, here's, you know, people that are relationships, how broad and they span. The number one reason I would say to do golf is for relationships. The relationships that you will make throughout life will last you forever. I mean, I truly believe that, you know, first and foremost. Then, of course, you know, it's a great hobby, and, you know, I like the exercise, and I enjoy it. It's mentally challenging. It's physically, you know, if you walk the course, you get a lot more benefits. All those things are wonderful. But at the end of the day, I'd be remiss to say the number one reason is I really do enjoy it. I mean, and it's a family. You know, it really becomes a family. We all know for business as well. I should mention that, too.
Oh, absolutely. And I'm finding, young women in our area are taking lessons and becoming more involved simply because they understand the attributes that will help them in business, get out on the golf course with their male counterparts. And you know, it doesn't hold them back not to be able to be involved in those situations. So,
absolutely. And this is what we found with this, which is why we did the format. Because even if a woman doesn't have time or doesn't want to get so avidly involved, but she wants to play twice a year in her corporate outing, then she should do it. And I always encourage them, even if you're not a great golfer, just get out. Men don't have a secret contract rolled up in their golf bag that they pull out on the golf course. That's not. It's a myth. You know, what happens is exactly what I just said. It's relationships. You spend 4 hours with somebody that you could never spend in an office meeting, in a restaurant meeting. There's so many distractions. You spend 4 hours with somebody, you find out about them personally, professionally, and that's why then people end up doing business. There aren't secret contracts rolled up while you're sitting in the office. They go out and golf and present. And ride in the cart the first time that you go. Take a lesson while everybody else is playing and go to the breakfast in the morning and the lunch and the award ceremony and work your way into it. There's no reason not to go to a corporate golf outing. None. And you'll get more comfortable. You get more comfortable, and then you play. Half of them are scrambles. Just learn to chip and putt, you know, and be good at that. You can score some points for your team, and it's really, there's a lot of ways. I just think that it's been very intimidating, and that's why we found that this breaking it down. It's been intimidating for people who don't really know how it works, and I think there are ways that it can be more inviting and people can be ushered in and have that experience, whether it's casual or they become, you know, avid golfers. But people don't just wake up and become avid golfers. I think you got to bring them into the fold.
We've been listening to Alisa Gaudet, has started the International Women's Golf Day to be held next Tuesday, June 7th, at a course near you. Visit their website, womensgolfday.com. Check on the locations tab to find out a course or a retail facility near you that you can participate. Alisa, thank you so much for talking with us today, and we hope that you'll come back and talk to us again, and we'll talk more about women's golf.
Absolutely. Thank you, Fred. And we really do thank people like you, because it's getting the word out and letting people know that this is available to them. So we appreciate you having us on, having me on.
Thanks so much.
There you have it. That was Alisa Calte, the founder of the initiative for the Women's Golf Day. Fred, it really has created that positive momentum globally, and it continues to grow. It's gaining attention even from female leaders in other sports, too, that are assisting there. Like you mentioned, I mean, it has exceeded its lofty goal with more than 400 golf facilities in more than 17 countries that are participating in this first-of-its-kind growth of the GLEAN initiative. That mission is to engage, empower, and support women, and they will experience it firsthand on June 7th around the globe. And this kind of initiatives are what we need more and more in golf, and definitely, like you mentioned, women right now are the top growing demographic in golf, and I think this can only help on it.
Carlos, I have to tell you, on the golf course that I'm here in Toledo, I went out on Sunday evening. And, you know, usually Sunday evening on the golf course here is dead. There's nobody out here. And I can go out, play a few holes, you know, not see anybody. And so Sunday evening about 6:30, I thought, I was going to go out and play a few holes. And I went clear around the golf course, and there were people on every hole. And we're talking about there were a lot of women. There were a lot of couples. There were a lot of couples with children. I was amazed. And so I thought, well, okay, I'll wait. I'll go back in the house. I'll come back out an hour later. And I did that. I came back to the house. I sat around for a little bit. I went back out about 7:30, and usually by 7:30 there's absolutely nobody out there. And this is a Sunday night on a holiday weekend, okay? The place was still packed. I don't know what it was, but Carlos, I just feel like the numbers are growing in golf again at the grassroots level, and I feel like families and women and children, juniors, are getting more involved. And so efforts like Alisa's Women's Golf Day can only add to the momentum. You know, things like Junior Golf League. You know, we heard Susie Whaley talk to us last year about her initiatives and bringing women to the game. And all that stuff, it just all works together. And I think it's just like building the snowball. So, I think it's all working, Carlos.
It's all working. And, hey, remember, everybody, we'll be celebrated between the hours of 4 p.m. and 8 p.m. when women and girls will be introduced to the game in an inviting and fun environment. That event will also encourage existing and former golf enthusiasts to attend with an opportunity to get up for 9 holes. From 4 to 6 p.m., all participants will have the option of 2 hours of lessons or an on-course 9-hole experience. From 6 to 8 p.m., attendees will participate in a celebratory gathering where they will socialize, network, and receive information on ways to become more involved in golf, you know, like program lessons, leagues, clinics, etc. So if you want to learn more or register at a golf facility for International Women's Golf Day outing, go to womensgolfday.com or write to info@womensgolfday.com. That will wrap up our VIG segment. We're going to take our last break, and when we come back, we're going to have our final patch for you, so don't go anywhere.
Thank you for listening. We'll be right back. In the meantime, don't forget to visit www.edraft.com for analysis, breaking news, and more. Also, remember to follow us on Twitter @edraftsports and on Facebook at facebook.com/edraftsport. Don't forget to check out our co-hosts on Twitter by clicking their names in the episode description. Now, back to the show.
And we're back, and now it's time for our final thoughts. And I'm going to start talking a little bit about Acushnet Company, you know, the owner of the golf brands, including Titleist and FootJoy, who is preparing to register with the U.S. regulators as early as June for an initial public offering that could value it at more than $2 billion and could begin marketing that IPO as soon as this autumn, according to the sources, who asked to not be named because the matter is private. That IPO would come 5 years after consumer products conglomerate Fortune Brands sold Acushnet under pressure from activist investor William Ackman to South Korean sports apparel company Fila Korea Limited and Mirae Asset Private Equity for $1.23 billion. Acushnet is now working with investment banks that include Morgan Stanley, JP Morgan Chase & Company, UBS Group AG, and Nomura Holdings on the IPO. Those sources said that on Wednesday. The golf industry, as you all know, has been tapered over the past several years as its prime demographic group has aged and millennials have sought pastimes that are less time intensive and more accessible. Still, as I keep insisting, the industry is expected to benefit this year from new media exposure as young golf stars compete in the Olympics in Rio de Janeiro this summer for the first time in more than a century. And for Acushnet, its greatest defense against broader industry woes may be its commanding market share in golf balls. As you know, golf balls are cheaper and more easily lost than golf equipment, making them more frequently replaced. The more rounds of golf people play, the more balls they will buy. So combined with the tailor-made sale, this has the potential to drastically reshape the industry as well as those who rely on the marketing dollars from those two companies. So stay tuned. We'll be all over it. And finally, hey, Jamie Donaldson's birdie finish to tie for 10th at the Irish Open moved him to number 60 in the world last week and spared him from qualifying for the U.S. Open. The U.S. Open field for Oakland on June 16th to the 19th now is half filled after 27 players earned exemptions from being in the top 60 this past week. The 156-man field has 78 exempt players. Another exemption was available this weekend to the winner of the BMW PGA Championship, which was won by Chris Wood. The rest of the field will be determined, Fred, by 36-hole qualifiers in Japan, England, and America, and by the top 60 in the June 13 world rankings.
Hey, Carlos, a couple things I have here to wrap up tonight. Both James Morrison and Rickard Carlberg scored aces during the final round of the BMW PGA Championship at Wentworth last week, but only Morrison's earned him one of the coolest prizes in golf for a hole-in-one, an Audi i8. Did you see the pics of that i8? I would look very good in that thing, Carlos. I need one of those. If you missed it, CBS did a great program on Jack Nicklaus leading into their coverage of the Colonial last week. It was an hour program, and they highlighted the benevolent aspect of the Nicklaus Foundation and the important work that's being done at the Nationwide Children's Hospital in Columbus because of the generosity of Nationwide and the Nicklauses. Over $50 million has been donated to Columbus Children's Hospital since 2011 alone. And also a couple things in Global Golf Post this week that I found very, very enjoyable reads. Ron Green Jr.'s article in Global Golf Post tackles the subject, why do golfers join clubs that are too difficult for even the pros to play? And he was, you know, thinking about Oakmont. Oakmont's one of the most difficult golf courses in the world. And, you know, they're going to have the U.S. Open there in a couple weeks. So, you know, why do members want to pay big bucks to belong to a golf course that goes and beats you up every week? I found that really interesting. Matter of fact, following along on that subject today, Doug Ferguson from the AP was asking pretty much in every interview. As a matter of fact, he was asking Jack Nicklaus, he asked him that question, you know, would you want to spend money to be a member of Oakmont when it's one of the most difficult? Would you want to join a golf course that would beat you up all the time? And so I'm not going to get into the answer he gave, but But, you know, so this is kind of a subject that's on everybody's mind right now. Also, a very enjoyable read by written by John Hopkins in Global Golf Post was the article on Peter Oosterhaus. You know, Oosterhaus was a standout golfer. Excuse me. On the European Tour for many years and was one of the best in the broadcasting booth for CBS. He's battling Alzheimer's and was forced to retire from the booth last year. As I mentioned, I did see him down at the Masters this year. He was walking around with his wife and with his son, just kind of taking it all in. But a good article on Oosterhaus and good stuff in Global Golf Post this week, Carlos. That's all I have.
And Back Niners, that wraps up another week of the Back Nine Report presented by eDraft.com. Thank you for listening to us. It's always our pleasure to bring you the latest on the world of golf. Special thanks to our VIGs, very important guest of the week, the good friend of the show, LPGA Chief Communications Officer Craig Kinn, and author and founder of the International Women's Day, Golf Day, Elise Gaudet. Don't forget to join us again next Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time here on Blog Talk Radio. Or if you missed it, check it out iTunes or tune in. And if you haven't done so, follow the show on Twitter. Our ID is at Back9Report. My name is Carlos Torres. Along with Fred Alvader, we wish you to be happy, be blessed, and enjoy the great game of golf. Happy golfing, everybody.
Good night, everybody.